Everyone dreams about living an uncommon life, but how we define that dream is very different for each of us. And for most, it's a lifelong pursuit. Welcome to the Uncommon Life Project podcast. We're going to introduce you to people who are living that life or enjoying the journey to get there. We're going to also give you some tools, tricks, and tips for starting or accelerating your own efforts to live an uncommon life, a life worth celebrating and savoring. Please welcome your hosts, Brian Dewhurst and Philip Ramsey.
Hello and welcome everybody to another episode of the Uncommon Life Project, where I'm your host, Philip Ramsey.
And I'm Brian Dewhurst.
It feels good to have you back, my friend. I love Aaron Kramer. He is doing an amazing job. But you know, like, you're just used to what you're used to.
Yeah.
And I'm used to Brian Dewhurst.
You want to sleep in your own bed. Maybe that's not the best analogy. After you've been on vacation.
Funny story. Brian and I partnered together, I always say, like, hey, my partner Brian. And I'm like, we got to really probably have one more adjective there. My business partner, Brian. So if this is your first time tuning in, one, thanks for taking your time. We know it's precious. We know it's valuable. And we want to provide you obviously something that is beneficial to what you're doing. And so this episode, we have a guest.
I can't wait.
I know. And it's something that we are now partnering with to jump into the space. It's sim racing. What in the world is it? IndyCar sim racing.
I know.
And Uncommon Wealth is partnered with them. What does that mean? One, we all know that I am excited about Formula One. And then some guy at church was like, yeah, I have a race. Or later today. And I'm like, what do you mean you got a race? He's like, I do sim racing. It's been this whole ordeal. We're now partnered with him. Let's get him on the show so we can at least have him hear his voice. Give me his bio.
We have the one, the only Joshua Baird on the show today. He is a systems engineer for a financial services company by day. Sounds boring. Mm-hmm. And by night, he is a passionate sim racer. He owns his own motorsports company called Iconic Motorsports, and he provides setups and team events for different motorsport enthusiasts. We can't wait to unpack this. Welcome to the show, Joshua.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. This is going to be a lot of fun today.
Where do we start, man? First,
can I start?
Yeah,
I'm like so jacked up about this. So my son's into video games. I think there's a massive intersection coming to the gaming industry with cryptocurrency. They call it play to earn is a big movement in crypto right now in the intersection of cryptocurrency and gaming. And then I just got back from Vegas and they had like this massive esports arena there. And so I think we've all kind of, you know, you've seen this stuff on like ESPN where the people are flying the drones through the little race course.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, which drone is like, racing. How are they doing that? And so anyways, and then this last summer, I'm at my brother-in-law's house, of all places, and he has this like totally tricked out IndyCar setup in his like office.
Interesting.
Pedals, wheels. I crashed the car in about 3.5 seconds, and it was just like, this is a thing. And so anyways, when I heard, Josh, you were going to be on the show, I was just like so jacked up to unpack this because I think it's going to be a big, big movement. So
we have a lot to unpack, but first, wait, you can get paid for playing video games.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start there because I feel like that's just something, just one step up. Mm-hmm. We're going to go probably five steps up here, but let's just go one step up because people are now getting paid to play video games.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. Just sitting here, I try to tune into that because it is my dream, of course, to be that guy that makes $10 million a month playing video games.
I mean, we want you to be that guy, Joshua.
Yeah. I would love to do that.
Be that guy.
There's probably about one in 10 million chance that I'll actually be that guy. But, you know, it's something like video
games.
You're
telling me there's a chance.
Yeah. You kind of have to have a niche. You have to have some, there's certain like criteria I'd say that would actually get you to that level. But most of it is just having the passion for it, wanting to be able to sit and have conversations like this about it and to be able to provide something in the market of, you know, sharing your technology and your gaming passion with other people that have mutual interest in that. So finding that group is key, and then just being able to talk with them about it, being passionate about it,
right?
Get those emotions going with your viewers to try and get them to do that. And then also there's a little bit of an investment and return on investment, right? Like if I'm just sitting there talking all day and like maybe talking back to the viewers, that may get me somewhere. But there's also things that you might have to do, like provide giveaways or exclusive content. I might drop this ball a little, or bomb a little early, but NFTs, like being able to provide something unique to that user that he can, they can only get through you, or the viewer, not user, viewer, they can only get through you.
Let me just take a step back of like, what in the world, why are you on this podcast? Right. And here's why. At the end of the day, Brian and I really do want to help people invest in themselves. Right. Like, what are you excited about? What do you get passionate about? It's probably not your engineering job, although you're great at it. It's this, like, I want to learn how to get paid driving behind a SIM car.
Yeah.
That would be epic. Right. Mm-hmm. Brian and I are those advisors that want to try to make that a reality. And so that's why people come to us, whatever it is. And we've had a lot of quirky different ideas. That's why when we talked, I was like, this is actually really cool.
Yeah.
And I want to at least edify this track that you can get paid to play video games. I don't know what else is more like, this sounds like a passion.
You know, I think we all played video games. You know, I'm 40, Phillip's 40. As of this airing, I always got to like caveat. But you know, we grew up playing Mario Brothers and Mario Kart, and James Bond on Nintendo 64 was my favorite game. If I could have been paid to play a game, it would have been that one. I never got into the Halo scene, but you know, fast forward now, I have a, you know, I think when we started, my son started playing Fortnite, it was probably 10, 11, 12, somewhere in there. And there was this tournament advertised where they were going to pay. They're going to have a Fortnite tournament, and the winner was going to get, like, I don't know how much he won, but it was like a couple $1 million. And this 13-year-old kid, I don't remember where he was from, it doesn't really matter, but he ended up winning the Fortnite tournament, and he's now like a multimillionaire. And I was like, holy cow. And not only that, what was really interesting about Fortnite was you didn't have to go buy the game. They gave the game away for free.
That's brilliant.
And what a lot of people don't understand are the power of Fortnite. When you talk about cryptocurrencies and like user base, Fortnite was like the, like, I think it was like the second largest cryptocurrency at one point. Their V-Bucks, which is like the currency within the game. And they had over like 500 million active users. So just that infrastructure actually made Fortnite one of the largest cryptocurrencies, kind of like, that wasn't the primary goal. It was just one of the best games ever made. And so that's really where, and then watching my son study these guys on YouTube, I was like, that's your first two major ways to monetize your passion in Fortnite was getting paid to shoot all these YouTube videos, and then maybe you win a couple tournaments. And so kind of you talking, Josh, about like, how do you monetize this? How do you get paid to do this? That's kind of the onion I want to peel back today, because I think there's like five or six ways you could monetize this based on some of the games coming out now. You know, from a model's perspective.
Basically, we're having a client interaction right now with Josh. How are we going to get you paid $1 million?
Let's do it.
No, so let's go back to like, when did you start realizing like, wait a second, I can actually start something and create something with this IndyCar series that could be valuable for not only myself, but it could fill a need for somebody else.
Yeah, so it's funny because I didn't actually create this league. I'm actually the newest administrator of this league. But I think kind of where it kind of took the shift and where I've played my part is when we first got started, it was a hobby, right? Like it costs us, you know, quite a bit of money to get the broadcasters to take care of the broadcasting side of the house for us. And we were letting people come in for free and just play, you know, as a hobby. So it, and you know, with hobbies, it's mostly just money pits. You can't. So my goal was to come in and actually turn the hobby into
a profit,
right? I at least want to break even on this, right? Like I can't be putting $2,000 a year down on this or, you know,
or more
or more and not see any return on this, especially from a perspective of we have that ability to create sponsorships and reach out to people and create unique avenues. So,
and you have a wife.
Yes. Well, not your wedding ring. Exactly. It's not your wedding ring.
So good.
That, she keeps me ground level because I'm sure we'd be pretty broke right now if she let me go full tilt on my hobbies, turning those passions into.
Wouldn't we all?
Yeah. Amen. Yeah. So I'm very thankful for her that she keeps me on the ground level for that because that's definitely one of those things where I can run into that issue with her.
So what was like, when did, you know, just because I'm not, I'm new to this, but I did it with my brother. When did these like IndyCar home racing setups come out? Like how long has this been going on?
Yeah, so this has actually been kind of an older, I think 2007 is when the platform we race on is called iRacing came out. And they were like, we want to build a physics model based racing series, not just, you know, the guy that can go on with the Xbox controller and turn a few laps, hit the left thumbstick properly. Right. But like if your tires overheat, you'll spin out.
Right.
If you hit the wall at a certain angle, it'll do damage where you have to park your car the rest of the race. So that really launched the sim racing sphere to the point now where they actually have eNASCAR series. They actually have some of the most talented NASCAR drivers or sim racers trying to compete in the eNASCAR environment, and it's officially sanctioned by NASCAR.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's launching, and I think those guys are actually starting to realize, because it's cool watching it, because now you have kids that played video games that now are interested in stock car racing because they understand what it takes to be a NASCAR driver now because they sat there and played iRacing. So it's a twofold like win-win situation for these guys over in these professional series because they get new viewers that they've never had before, new fans that they probably would have never been able to reach outside of technology.
Kids that would never know who Kyle Busch is or, you know, some of this other stuff.
Yeah. Let me also take this step, this just for the average listener that's listening. All of your fans are probably like, why is Philip talking right now? Which I get. But like, this is what it means. Like you go on a race and there is no reset, put you back in the middle of the road. Like, no, you're done. Yeah, you're done out. Now. You're out. Like, sorry about it. You're basic. Like, you're really done for the whole race. Changes the whole game.
There's no pizzas. There's no track pizzas. To like repair your car, right?
Yeah. Oh, right. There's not like why, and it puts you back in the center of the thing. Yeah. Or if like there is no hyper boosts when you're at the end, there is none of that.
Right.
Which really puts it in perspective, like,
it's pretty real.
It's pretty real.
Yeah.
The
other thing, analogy I want to make, because I think to a lot of people, even me, I'm guilty of this. Like, when I first heard this, like, people are going to get paid for video games. But, like, if you think about how much money NASCAR makes, you know, I don't know even what the number is, you might, but it's probably tens of billions of dollars a year industry, right? Just NASCAR, not even IndyCar, Formula One, all this other stuff. But you think about it in terms of like American Idol, where the music industry was super difficult to get into. And then American Idol opens up, and now like Kelly Clarkson's a household name, Michael Bublé, all these people that maybe wouldn't have been discovered, maybe they would have been. But it made the path much easier. And then you look at NASCAR and what it would take to like run a team and pay for all this stuff. I mean, it's got to be tens of millions of dollars to run a NASCAR team with one or two cars, drivers, support. All of that. And so to me, this is kind of like an extension a little bit of like American Idol. Like these are really talented drivers. Like the equipment, I mean, the equipment is very similar. I mean, obviously it's not a physical car in your living room, but like it's pretty close from a physics standpoint, right?
Yeah. So doubling back to what Philip said really quick with the whole damage you're out thing. Last year I raced for a sponsor that is very generous to us every year, IndyCar Ministry. And they sponsored the Indy 500, and I wanted to race their paint because I wanted to thank them for sponsoring us. I wrecked within like 20 laps. So I missed out. I was like, it was like one of those situations like, but I'm here for the sponsor. Let me go again, you know, but I can't, you know, my day was done. But going back to your statement as well. They have, there's a few big names like William Byron. He races Jeff Gordon's car, got started on iRacing. Then you have Ty Majeski. He's kind of coming through the ranks. He's one of the top iRacing racers right now as well. And he's actually come up through iRacing's kind of sponsoring him to go into the big leagues because that's a huge moneymaker for them. Like, oh, you can just come to my platform and then you can go be a professional race car driver. So it's huge.
And it's not unsimilar what you saw in the UFC from like a reality TV show to now like you're fighting on the main card, right? I mean, it's like we're seeing this type of adoption, I think, in all the major entertainment areas. Maybe not like baseball, basketball, football as much, but I think you're seeing this path and this, you know, barrier to entry come down, you know? So yeah.
Zero to hero pretty quick with technology, I think, because you can just make your own platform.
Right. So after our conversation that we had at church, and you were like, I got a race later. And I'm like, I'm sorry, what? And yeah, I was like, so can I tune into this thing? Yeah. Like, I kind of want to, I'm kind of intrigued. And anyway, I didn't have a chance to do it, but you sent it to me later.
Yeah.
One, by the time I watched it, there was like 1,700 views already. Mm-hmm. So people are watching this. Mm-hmm. And you started, because you have to have a qualifying lap, just like a real race.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. And didn't have the greatest qualifying. Can we just start there, Joshua?
Yeah, okay. It was terrible.
Okay, started 31 out of 32. Mm-hmm. Is that how many cars could have been, or could they have been more cars in that race?
So technically speaking, there could have been for that specific race. There's actually a limited number of pit stalls in certain tracks. So we do actually put a cap on that. But we do try to cap it at the amount of pit stalls that are available. So we
to make
could,
it realistic.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly. So our goal at the Classic IndyCar Series is to make it as realistic as possible. Points, we go through and we review every contact that happens between two drivers after every race.
Shut your mouth.
And then we can dock points or based on stuff like that. So that way it keeps the realism. So that way you don't got guys going out there and just trying to drive backwards and stuff like that.
Yeah. Valid.
Yeah. So we try our best to keep the immersion. And I think at some point, my hope is to grow the league enough to where we actually have to say, sorry guys, but we want the best talent on the track. And you're not making the cut.
You're not.
Sorry.
Right.
And I think that's normal. You know, baseball has a farm system. Mm-hmm. Basketball has a farm system.
Yeah.
You know, even I think the NASCAR IndyCar Series has some sort of farm system, don't they?
Yeah, so like Road to Indy is a huge one for IndyCar. NASCAR, you got the trucks and the Xfinity Series, you know, the Whelen Modified Series. So plenty of avenues to get your way into the professionals. And I think I would love to have a farm league for Classic IndyCar Series,
right.
A place where you have to prove yourself.
Which you figured this out. You're going to have that. That's only like the next thing. So I want to keep riffing on this because I have a point of this. So I start watching, I'm in all honesty, laying in bed and like watching it on my phone, but it does look pretty realistic. Yeah. So that's cool. Then I see your name pop up and I'm like, ooh, 31st. Like we can be better, Joshua. And then at the end of it, guess what he got? You ready for this?
I'm going to say second.
No, he got sixth, which I thought was really good. Yeah. Like 31st to sixth is like, by the end, they were saying your name because they were pretty impressed, the announcers or whoever. Yeah. So anyway, it was just one race, but I thought it was really cool. Mm-hmm. And like all of a sudden you just see like a crash and then like those people are just gone. Boop, gone. Like your day is over.
Yeah.
So
was it like the yellow flag or the green flag with it, when there's a caution?
Oh, yellow flag for caution. Yeah.
You have that in this?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we do. And the simulation actually triggers a lot of them. If a car stops on the racing line, it's smart enough to know that, and then it'll trigger the caution for us. We're looking into ways because our road course doesn't really have that option right now. Mm. And I've been having discussions with the administrators. I cite on the fact that immersion, okay. I don't want to go off in this rabbit hole too long, but on road courses, you know, cautions will bring cars back together, and that brings the competition back together,
right?
So they don't get spread out. We had one race last year, the guy almost lapped the entire field because there was no way to bring him back together. He just took off like a, you know, like a bullet out of a cannon, and no one could catch him because he was just doing that great. As where cautions may actually bring us back together and give somebody a fighting chance. Mm. But, you know, we can't do that because of the limitations of the software right now. Hopefully in the future we can have some discussions.
So one thing that I ask, cause you do have to pit, like this is a real deal. Like you have to pit and you got to think about when to pit. You obviously don't have a crew saying like, it's time, Joshua, pit, you know, so you have to figure that out.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, what happens to the pit? Like, are you pushing buttons and stuff? So can you walk through that?
Yeah. So it's pretty crazy. We actually, you can run by yourself or you can run with a team. And luckily I have a smart enough team that can do some math for me, because if you pit at the wrong time, you'll get off cycle with the guys. And then sometimes you'll have to go in and get more fuel when everybody else is still out on the track. So you can go
you
two laps
over pit.
Right. Exactly. So you don't want to go two laps down because you mistimed your pit stop. So having your teammates in there in your ear saying, okay, this is what I've determined is the window that you can pit without, without running into issues, or we could take this risk or
wait,
whatever.
You do have a team in your ear?
I do, but they're also out there racing.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So there are other guys driving on the track with me. We're just communicating with each other like, hey, we should probably go in this time to get tires because I don't know when the next time is. We're going to go get tires. Yeah. But when I actually go sit in the stall, I drive straight up to the stall. The computer takes over. And it's kind of cool. They implemented this feature where if you come in like at a weird angle,
squonky,
yeah, it'll increase your time in the pit stop, right?
Oh,
so
nice.
If you come in dead center, you'll usually get the same pit stop every time. And so, and then one of the other things is too, is if you're out on the track saving fuel, you come in, that's less fuel you have to fill up in the pit stop, right?
Makes
so
sense.
It takes, you take about a second off your time if you're out there saving fuel, and then you come in and take the pit with less fuel.
This is great.
This is
okay.
Wild.
So I want to just say right now, we are sponsoring basically Uncommon Life Project, our podcast. We're sponsoring a race coming up, which I'm super excited about. I don't know what that means, but I'm super excited about it. Okay. So now I want to kind of move the whole conversation into like, how could you monetize this? Which gets Brian all hyped up because he's a great thinker this way. So Brian, where do we go from here?
Well, let's start with, how is it generating revenue right now?
Okay. Yeah.
Brilliant question.
Yeah. It's been really difficult from two aspects. One, our goal at Classic IndyCar Series is to have the most, least amount of restrictions to get in as possible, which one of them is a paywall, right? Like, we don't want to say, oh, it's going to cost you $100 to get in, because we don't want people to be deterred from wanting to join our series and then get in that way. And then the other one is, too, this project started as a hobby. Mm-hmm. And transitioning that into, let's make this, I don't want to say I want to become a millionaire. I mean, it'd be really cool to be a millionaire, but I would at least like to break even in this series by the end of the year, right? And so doing that, we've run into a couple of hurdles, but the huge thing is, you know, especially like generous donors, you guys, you know, contributing to be able to have us race under, you know, your banner. It gets you exposure. It gets us, you know, gets us to pay off some of our operating costs. Another one that's been huge, I don't know if you guys have heard of it, it's called Patreon.
Yeah.
And the amazing thing about Patreon, it costs us as an operating cost, it costs us $0.
Right.
Yeah. It's literally, as soon as your money comes in, they take commission, which for us,
found money.
We didn't have it before, so who cares? Like, as long as I don't have to pay it,
right? We Philip and I actually talked about because there's a lot of podcasters that use Patreon.
Yeah.
So we actually talked about, you know, do we put our podcast on Patreon? So very familiar with that. We end up not doing that, but yeah. So those are kind of the main sources. Is there anything else?
Yeah. The really hard thing is, I would say, is our league is international. We have people from just about every continent in the world coming in and racing and trying to find a way. Like one year I was like, oh, if you give this much money, I'll get you a t-shirt. But it's like, how do I ship? When I looked up shipping for a t-shirt to Germany,
losing,
it was like
money,
$100 for the shirt. And I'm like, oh, I can't do this. Like, I'll just get you a gift card and you go buy your own shirt.
Right.
But so trying to, and Patreon is free international shipping. So that was a huge sale for us. So I'm really leveraging that this year.
Yeah.
But going into the future, it's going to be trying to find new avenues, ones that are minimal operating costs, or at least like, you know, giveaways where it's a return on investment, right?
Right.
You get people throwing in money for a raffle, and then you pay out the winner, but at the end you're net positive.
Yeah, you're net positive.
Yeah, because so just some return on investment
right.
stuff. So
okay, Well, I think so. I've been exploring the play to earn field because I had this conversation with a guy last night. Actually, I was at my daughter's track meet, and it was an acquaintance. You know, we've known each other for 10 years, and you know, he knows what we do and or what I do or what Philip and I do, and so he's just like, you know, we just need an extra $500 a month. Mm. And I was like, this may sound dumb, but there's a lot of play to earn video games out there where you can like make money for just playing a video game. Mm. And so anyways, and just the interest my son has had in video games, and I like video games too. I just don't have a lot of time. But so anyways, I've kind of been exploring this space, but there's a really interesting business model that I think is going to revolutionize gaming. Mm. And I'm seeing it play out like in front of my face, basically, in the last 4 to 6 months.
And there has been some, like, to add on what you've already talked about, this whole, what's the video game that you were talking about?
Decentraland or
Fortnite?
Fortnite. Yeah. To play on that, you saw how wildly successful that was. And like, you're thinking through, like, okay, that business model could work. Let's just.
Yeah. And like, Fortnite didn't even. I don't even think personally they scratched the surface of what they could have done with V-Bucks.
Yeah.
I think it was, they were just trying to stay true to the game and they didn't want to pivot, but they probably could have pivoted into cryptocurrency. Mm. But now you're seeing these projects pivot. So I think the first way that I would look at monetizing this, because really this is a digital racing game, very realistic though, is connecting into the metaverse somehow. And one of the games I've kind of been messing around with is Decentraland. They have several different games you can play to earn, but their big one is poker. And you go into like a digital poker room, but you have to buy an NFT, which is a non-fungible token, to play. So if you don't have one of these NFTs, and again, they're like shirts, hats, like it's clothing for your little avatar. But if you buy one of these NFTs and you play, they have challenges and you win the challenges and then they pay you in their cryptocurrency. So I think the first, you know, thing we kind of talked about this pre-show is, you know, you could have NFTs to upgrade or brand or market your cars in different ways or your team stuff, right? Like your driver. I don't know kind of what it all looks like, but your colors, your mirrors, your helmet, you know, helmet color, all that stuff could be NFTs.
Yeah.
Because, kind of like you said, there's specs on what size the car has to be, what the tires are. You know, like, there's a common shape, if you will, to all those things. And so you could NFT that all that stuff. And what a lot of people don't understand about NFTs is the creator of the NFTs, which could be you guys, every time those are bought and sold digitally, you're getting a commission on that. And Mark Cuban, kind of the, you know, the billionaire who owns the Dallas Mavericks, talks about this. Like, if I sell, and I being Mark Cuban, if he sells a ticket for $100 to a season ticket holder, and then, you know, let's just say, I'm trying to think of who my favorite NBA players are. Let's just say Golden State's in town, and people are willing to spend $500 for that ticket. Mark Cuban and the Mavericks don't make any of the money on the $100 to $500 sale.
The extra.
The extra.
Right. So, like, if I had that ticket of $100, I was a ticket holder, and Brian wanted to go to it, I could sell that ticket to Brian for $500.
Right.
Yeah. And what Mark is saying is I don't get a cut of that $400
profit.
Excess.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And so with these NFT platforms, the creator of the NFT, like, if the tickets were NFTs, they get 6% of that $400 growth. And so for this poker game, like when their NFTs came out, I think they were like a couple $100 to mint them, is what they call them, is basically create them out of thin air or post the collateral to create them. Now they're worth almost $2,000. And that was less than a year ago. It's gone up 10x. And so I think the NFT thing is like the number one thing you got to figure out, because if your drivers had to come in and buy an NFT to participate, which it seems like they're paying some sort of small fee to get in.
Actually, that's what's kind of been unique about us right now, is that we are actually allowing them to come in for free. And I do want to have a quick disclosure to any Classic IndyCar Series drivers or listeners out there right now that may have tuned into this podcast, that these are just brainstorming ideas. Brainstorming. This isn't happening next year or anything like that.
Welcome to Uncommon Wealth Partners.
Right? It's not going to be a $10,000 entry fee for 23. I can tell
but
you that
it could
right
be.
Now.
It could I'm be just someday. Kidding.
But yeah, these are just brainstorming. But yeah, there's so many things with NFTs, I think. And that's one of my next steps that I would love to take.
But if you were to charge them, sorry, great caveat. If you were to charge them and then they had like a purse that they could win, you could see like, I'll buy a stupid purse.
Do you have purses now?
No, see, and that's another thing that we're considering. Well, I guess I should say I'm brainstorming ways to, you know, and improve the.
I'll speak for both Philip and I. We'd be interested in a purse.
Yeah. I would love to get to that point. I think we're like step 2 of 5 for purses. But that's definitely in the future.
But you could see like if you had a purse, it would be more. Like the investment might be there to be like, I'll buy a helmet for X if I knew that I had a chance at
how
y.
many races are there? Do you have like a season like the
So it's usually a 12 to 14 race season. You throw in a couple drop weeks. And I think another thing that I was considering with NFTs too was buying seats. So you come in with a seat, you can give that seat to whatever driver you want.
Right.
But if the team owns it, then they can pick their best guys to put in those seats.
Right.
And let that be the, let the teams fund the drivers and let the drivers continue to drive for free.
Right.
So
which is kind of the way it's set up now, right?
Yeah. Pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. Drivers don't pay out of pockets for their own cars. Yeah. So,
cause just in explaining this, I was just like, I want a team. Like that was my natural, like I'm ready. See, I don't even race, but I'm ready for a team.
Yeah. And that's another thing you can dive into too, right? Like Uncommon Wealth Partners team, you guys buy the seat for the team. Then you go pick the drivers, put them in.
I'm right there. I can't speak for Philip.
So now I can have sponsors that want to come in, buy the seats for the teams. They pick the drivers that they want to race for. I mean, you can do it just like they do it in the pros, right? It's that exact same content. I can sell the sponsor stickers or the cars to sponsors for NFTs, right? Like the possibilities of NFTs are endless. So I know that has to be our next step to get launch us into making Classic IndyCar Series a deal like that.
I think the NFTs open up so much because it's not even so much about the one-time purchase of the NFTs as much as it is like, you know, especially in like Decentraland or the poker, it's now like the buying and selling. Like every time they're bought and sold, it's creating revenue for, you know, in your example, be the IndyCar. And so it's just like the ongoing revenue, you know, it creates like that ongoing cash flow. And so.
Yeah, and think about this too. This popped into my head. Like virtual diecasts. People love buying diecasts. That's kind of like the iconic thing of motorsports. So what if we created a virtual diecast NFT, and then let's say that guy that won the championship, and then 10 years later when he's super famous, you have an NFT of him winning his first virtual
the
championship.
Commemorative NFTs.
Sure. So the possibilities of NFT in the sim racing space are just endless.
Yeah. So I think the other side of it is probably a little bit more complicated. And what, you know, Decentraland is its own, not only ecosystem, but it's its own cryptocurrency. And so there's several of them out there now. There's Sand. There's another one. I can't think of the name of it, but it's, you know, I don't even want to name it. It doesn't matter. So anyways, it would be interesting if you had your own cryptocurrency, because then you could essentially, you know, instead of us saying, hey, we as Uncommon Life Project, Uncommon Wealth, will put up a purse of $100 or $250. If we said, hey, we'll put up a purse, but it's actually going to be this cryptocurrency that the e-gaming community uses, not only just your league, but maybe other leagues. Now there's a groundswell, right? There's like a loyalty. And because you're creating that currency out of kind of thin air, I mean, there's really no cost to you, you know, or you could do it in like Bitcoin or, you know, some other cryptocurrency. And so that's kind of how the other games are getting massive traction is leveraging their own cryptocurrency. And so I think between NFTs and then creating your own cryptocurrency, I mean, you're in a whole other realm now. Like just with those two small, those tweaks. Two carrots, right, you know, so to speak, driving revenue and adoption and then incentivizing gameplay. Right. Mm-hmm. So that to me is like kind of step one, step two. And then, you know, purses, maybe sponsorships, viewerships. I mean, it all kind of would just naturally, like the model in IndyCar, Formula One, NASCAR is already built. We're essentially just trying to digitize it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So
really digitize it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
Talk about, I want to take a step back because you kind of mentioned, you know, I think some people, there's a lot of people that aren't into motorsports.
Okay, yeah.
And I, like, could you just, like, in 30 seconds break down the difference between NASCAR, IndyCar, and Formula One, and then take it a step further, and then you kind of had some really cool other races that you guys are doing and events that you're doing. Kind of, just kind of unpack that real quick.
Yeah, sure. So, so we'll say the big three players in the racing discipline. There's probably more than that, and I'll probably get yelled at by all the racing enthusiasts after this. My big three that I'll refer to now is NASCAR, IndyCar, and Formula One. So NASCAR is closed body stock cars that you kind of see on the streets, obviously heavily modified. And then Formula One is open wheel, heavy on the, you know, wings and stuff like that. Super fast cars, totally designed to go as fast as humanly possible on road courses. So, and NASCAR's focus on oval circuits.
Right.
IndyCar bridges that gap of having the open wheel concept of going as fast as possible, but they dive into both road courses and ovals. Nice. So they're almost the middle gap between IndyCar and Formula One.
And probably the best drivers, right? Like if you're doing both, would you argue? I'm kind of giving you a platform to brag a little bit.
Yeah, right. So if you can conquer IndyCar, you're probably the best. Like Jimmy Johnson all came around from NASCAR to IndyCar because he wants to win the Indy 500, which is the most
prestigious
racing award you could pretty much win. And that's in the IndyCar series. There's 500,000 people that show up at that race every year.
Right.
It's the world's largest spectacle. And then you got drivers like Romain Grosjean that came from Formula One and is racing an IndyCar now.
How's he doing, by the way?
He's not doing very good on the ovals, as you can imagine.
Okay.
But he's a pretty good road driver. So,
sure, which you probably expect
that. Yeah, yeah, right. I'm sure that his bosses were expecting that too. So.
Yeah, right.
So he's doing pretty decent. Jimmy Johnson, his first oval race, he's doing terrible at the road cars.
Terrible.
Like, last five places on the road races. But he finished sixth in his first IndyCar oval race.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So
respectable.
Yeah. Yeah. So as you can imagine, the guys that come from those one wing or the other, they come in and they're probably good at that one spot, but they're not good at the other. So having the guys that balance between all those disciplines, is really quite the thing to see. And I think that IndyCar is growing because people are realizing that.
Yeah.
Right. There was a second part to
the events. You guys got different types of events. You're not just driving around the track all the time.
Yeah. So there is a third discipline and it's endurance racing. Or another discipline, I guess. I shouldn't label it as third. It's based on real life IMSA, series or, other endurance series, and they're 24-hour races. And literally, there's the same car driving around the track for 24 hours straight.
Holy cow.
Yeah. So the cool
are they thing, trying to do like laps, or are they just like how many laps can you do in 24 hours?
That's exactly right. Okay. You don't worry about those like, oh, I'm 2 seconds slower than the fastest guy in the track, because if that guy wrecks, then you're going to beat him by 100 laps, right? Like,
wow.
So it's all about starting and finishing.
Is it team oriented or is it individual?
Yeah, so it is team oriented, and what
lame.
It is you can you take about 5 or 6 hour shifts. And then you swap out drivers. So
it's like the movie with Christian Bale, right? And
Exactly.
Ford versus Ferrari.
Yes, okay. That is exactly based
on. That's my only way to understand
it down.
So.
Yep. So you take shifts. I've done probably 3 or 4 of them. I survive them, but
You're not thriving. I'm not. No one's thriving in that.
No. There's a couple guys out there. I'm like, you're out of this world, dude. We call them aliens in the racing world, sim Jeez. Racing world, because they're just out of this world, just putting out.
All right. So this begs the question. Joshua, I put you in a real car. This okay. is real life now.
The three of us.
Well, I don't know about that. You'll beat us. No problem. But like, would you be comfortable behind the wheel, real life?
Ooh, that's a tough question, because
it's kind of like trading like fake money. Yeah, you know, like TD Ameritrade, you have this like play money or what is it called? Like
paper money.
Paper money. Yeah, paper money. And then you go to the real money. Mm-hmm. It's like a whole different world. So I get that you probably aren't, because it's just you can't, but I still think you'd have a pretty good shot.
Yeah. I don't know. It's tough, because you want to think that you can have that up. One of the huge things that they'll never be able to simulate is G-forces. Mm. And that by itself is a whole, makes it a sport versus just driving your Sunday driver, right? Like you're fighting, you know, pounds and pounds of forces pressed up against you. And over at Iowa Speedway, they can hit 180 miles per hour on that little tiny 1 mile track Indy cars. So those guys are taking on, I think they take on up to 5 G's of force in those turns, because it's just so much pressure on them that they're dead by the end of the race.
It's super interesting, because Philip and I both have VR headsets. I'm a huge fan of it. I think it's sweet, but they're making now these like vests that you put on. Mm. So like if you're in a shooting game or a boxing game or some sort of like combat sport game, that the suit will actually, they call it a haptic. It'll actually like press it. Like you'll feel it from this suit. Mm-hmm. So I bet in the next few years, you're going to have like whole cockpits you can install in your house.
Well, they have them now.
They do.
And then like they can like move and it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. There's
this room would be actually perfect for it. You know what I'm saying?
So our title sponsor this year is actually called Butt Kicker. And what they do is they use the low frequencies of bass to give the feeling of vibrations on the road and stuff like that. So you can really, and the steering wheels, they come out with now, there's a entry level steering wheel that, if you hit a wall and you don't take your hands off, it'll break your wrists, because it's that much feedback.
Holy
that are in these. Yeah. Yeah. So, there's ton of VR, it supports VR. So half of our racers in our league are in virtual reality. I actually started off in virtual reality, until my headset broke.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I don't know if I can do this.
Yeah. But it's incredible. You know what you're going to be able to do. So
dude, Josh, I feel like we just scratched the surface, but I am excited as Uncommon Wealth to be able to pour into this. Yeah. One, you're pursuing your passion. Mm-hmm. Two, you're trying to figure out how to monetize it, which is like pretty much what we do every day. Mm-hmm. Obviously you heard it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, thank you for taking the time.
Yeah.
Tell us more about it. And I think that we would be excited to continue this partnership, helping out and trying to figure out how to monetize this for you. And
yeah, we can. So I'm unsure when this is going to actually get posted, but I think October 16th is the day. It is going to be the Uncommon Wealth Partners 300, and it will be at Phillip Island, which is a real life track based out of Australia. So,
and that's the reason why we picked
it. Exactly.
You got to know that. Yeah. Brian's like, that felt right.
I was like, the stars lined up for this one. That's why has to be this one.
We'll air this before that, just so everybody can get a little excited and tune in.
Yeah, it should be great. Last year, I think it came down to the last 10 laps of the race where they were fighting till it in tooth and nail, and just ton of great competition last time we raced there. So I'm expecting it to be just as good. One of our runners up for champion last year won that race. Hmm. So I'm looking forward to see if he can do that again. He's on my team this year.
I'm expecting for you to win.
Yeah, exactly.
And then maybe sometime Brian and I can be the announcers of it. It would be a trip. I'm telling you that right now.
Dude, I would love to have you guys come on. We could even schedule something that you guys can come on and talk during the race too.
Okay. Wow. We can do that.
Very good. Thank you so much, Joshua.
Yeah. Thank you guys for having me. It was such a great time talking about this.
We got to keep doing this. This is great.
Heck yeah.
Well, hey, you've been listening to the Uncommon Life Project. I've been your host, Philip Ramsey.
And I am Brian Dewhurst.
Till next time, go be uncommon. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, everybody.
That's all for this episode of the Uncommon Life Project. brought to you by Uncommon Wealth Partners. Be sure to visit uncommonwealth.com to learn more about our services. Don't miss an episode as we introduce you to inspiring people who are actively pursuing an uncommon life.